Good morning. It's time to get started in our Bible class. Had a good crowd today. I'm thankful for everybody that stuck around for Bible class. We're in Genesis chapter 42. Genesis chapter 42. Quick review. The famine has hit the land that Pharaoh had dreamed about. The 7 years of plenty are gone. The famine is very severe. And it happens that there is nothing to eat at Jacob's house, or at least not very much to eat. So Jacob tells his son at the beginning of chapter 42 to go down into Egypt. Now remember, Joseph is in Egypt. He's second in command over everything that's there. Joseph had made a plan. He had stockpiled food for those 7 years of plenty, and now he is selling to people to keep people alive. Again, all part of God's plan. So at the beginning of chapter 42, Jacob sends them down to Egypt. He sends 10 brothers, but he keeps Benjamin. Remember, he didn't want Benjamin to go down. So those brothers go down. Joseph sees them. He recognizes them. They don't recognize him. If you'll remember, they bow down in front of Joseph, causing Joseph to remember his dreams that he had when he was 17 years old. And all of those things came true that God said in those dreams would happen. Now, Joseph is beginning to understand the purpose behind all of this. And so Joseph hatches a plan, if you will. The Bible says he speaks roughly to his brothers, not because he's not trying to be evil or mean or anything, but he's trying to get information. And we talked about last week, he's using fear to get that information. When people are afraid, they will pretty much just spill their guts, tell you whatever you know they think you want to hear because they're trying to get themselves out of trouble. So they tell him that their father's still alive. They have a younger brother at home. They even tell Joseph that one of their brothers is dead. And that's kind of funny that they're speaking to the brother that they say he's no more, but he's the one in front of them. They don't know this. All right, so Joseph tells them, nope, you're spies. And the only way you're going to prove to me that you're not spies is you're going to have to stay in prison, and I'm going to send one of you back home to get your little brother, and that will prove it, and I'll let you out. Well, Joseph keeps them in prison for 3 days, and then he loosens up a little. And he says, I'm going to keep one of you in prison, and 9 of you can go home, but you've got to bring your brother back to get this one out of prison. And then I will believe that you're not spies. You can trade in the land. So he does that. He sends them back home. He puts their money back in their sacks, and if you'll remember, that's where we ended up. They're on their way home. One of them happens to stop and look into his sack, and he sees the money, and they are terrified. And that's where we wound up. I believe it's verse 28, and they said, you know, they're afraid. What's God done to us? What's God done to us? They're terrified, all right, so that they find this money. So we will pick up in verse 29. It says, then they went to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, and they told him all that had happened to them, saying, the man who is lord of the land spoke roughly to us. So they're recounting all of this to their father. Did he speak roughly to them? Yeah. Again, that was part of his plan. Not to be mean, but to try to figure out and try to reconcile all of these things. So he spoke roughly to us and took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, we are honest men. We are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the youngest is with our father this day in the land of Canaan. So they rehash things to their father. Then the man, the lord of the country, said to us, by this I will know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me. Take food for the famine of your households and be gone. And bring your youngest brother to me so that I shall know that you are not spies, but that you are honest men. I will grant your brother to you, and you may trade in the land. So again, all the things that we hashed out, they recounted before their father. All right, verse 33. It says, then it happened as they emptied their sacks. Now remember, 9 brothers are heading back home. Up until this point, only one of them has looked into his sack of grain and saw the money. So now they begin emptying their sacks, that surprisingly, each man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. Now, we said in verse 28 that one brother saw the money in his sack, and they were terrified, and they were wondering, why did God do this to us? And just they're tore up. And now every one of them sees the same thing. Can you imagine? That's multiplied by nine. So they are really dealing with a rough time. All right, verse 36. And Jacob, their father, said to them, "You have bereaved me. Joseph is no more, Simeon is no more, and you want to take Benjamin. All these things are against me." What's he doing? He's blaming them, right? "You've bereaved me. Joseph's already dead. Simeon might as well be dead. And now you're wanting to take Benjamin?" Now, let's notice this. Why does he say Simeon is no more? Jacob does not intend for what to happen. For Benjamin to go, right? So, in essence, Jacob's just saying Simeon's good as dead. Because Benjamin's not leaving. He says, "You're wanting to take Benjamin, but you're not taking him." He says, "All of this has bereaved me." We're going to come back to that in just a moment and talk about it. Reuben spoke to his father, and he says, "Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you." Reuben, the firstborn, the oldest, steps up and says, "Hey, you've got to let Benjamin go. That's the only way we can eat and live. We're going to die." He says, "You can kill my two sons if I don't bring him back." I mean, that's putting it on the line, isn't it? That's making yourself very responsible by saying, "I will bring him back." But does Jacob trust Reuben? No, Reuben's already laid with one of his concubines, right? He doesn't trust him anyways. So he's not going to listen to anything that he says. But he says, "My son shall not go down with you. I'm not letting him go. For his brother is dead and he is left alone." He's left alone. What does that mean? It's the only one left of Rachel, right? He's not alone. He's got 10 other brothers and some sisters. In fact, I believe he had 33 kids, right? So he's got a lot of brothers and sisters. But in Jacob's mind, he's left alone. He's the only one he really cares about, right? "If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you would bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave." If you take him and something happens to him, I'm good as dead. I will grieve myself to death. That happens, right? All right, I want to look at some things. I want you to look at different reactions to adversity. Joseph had faced adversity more than anybody else, right, of this family. He had faced adversity. What did he attribute that to? Now, maybe when he was going through it, maybe he didn't understand everything, but how did he handle it? He always trusted in God, right? He looked to God for his strength. He appealed to God to help him to get through. And when he got to where he is, he's looking back and he realizes that God brought him through all that adversity to bring him where he is. So you've got that example of responding to adversity. All right, number two, you've got his brothers. How does his brothers respond to adversity? Well, when they're there they have to stay in prison for 3 days, and Joseph can hear them talking because he still speaks Hebrew, and they don't think he can, you know, they're like, "Hey, God is punishing us, right? God is punishing us because of what we did by throwing him into that pit. God is punishing us." When the brothers find the money in their sack, what do they say? "What is this that God has done to us? God is punishing us." All right, so one individual responds to adversity by saying, "God is making me stronger and preparing me for where it is that I need to be." Number two, his brothers respond to adversity by saying, "God is punishing me." Do we do that sometimes? Bad things come our way and we think, you know, God is just punishing me. I can remember a lady telling me one time, she had buried her children, and she said, "I just felt like that I just hadn't been faithful enough and God was punishing me because this happened." That's not true at all. But that's another response to adversity. Number three, how does Jacob respond to adversity? What did we just read? He said, "Hey, you know, you guys have bereaved me." Look back up what we just read up here in verse 36. Joseph said to them, "You have bereaved me. You've bereaved me. You guys have caused me all of this bad luck. You know, Joseph's dead. Simeon's as good as dead. And now you're wanting to take Benjamin." He says, "This is just all just pure, just bad luck." Joseph or Jacob responds to adversity by saying, "It's just bad luck," right? Jacob is not a spiritual man. I hope you have picked up on that as we have gone through this class. You know, sometimes you'll read some commentaries and people will hold Jacob up in this light. He's just this faithful man and he has done all of these things and just a great man. Jacob been a deceiver since the day he was born. That's what his name meant, right? He wrestled with God, and God changed his name to Israel. But did Jacob really do a whole lot better? Let me ask you something. When you get to Hebrews chapter 11, we call that the Hall of Faith, right? The Hall of Fame of the Bible. And you read about, you know, by faith, Noah being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear and prepared an ark. That's big, right? You read about Abraham, verse 8. Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out into a land that he didn't know about. And he went, right? You read about Moses. He forsook the passing, the Egypt, and chose to not enjoy the passing pleasures of sin for a season. You read about, you know, David, and you read about all of these mighty men and this great acts of faith. What do we read about Jacob in Hebrews chapter 11? Now think about that. If Jacob is really this just great, magnificent man of faith, why don't the Bible tell us about an event? You know what we read? Hebrews 11 verse 21 says, by faith, Jacob blessed the two sons of Joseph while leaning on the top of his cane. You know the most faithful thing the Bible says Jacob did? When he was dying, he blessed Joseph's two sons. Jacob's not a man that we need to look to. Out of these three that we just looked at, responses to adversity, we got to be like Joseph. We may realize that what we're going through is a difficult time, but maybe God is going to use this difficult time to bring us into something better and to prepare us for what's before us. Don't be like his brothers and say, just God is punishing us and all this bad is happening because of that. Don't be like Jacob and just say, when something bad happens, it's just pure bad luck. Just pure bad luck. Can you see the faithfulness in those three? I hope so. Be like Joseph. That's why it's written in this book, so that we can understand and know and to be more like him. All right. Chapter 43 opens up and continues in the same story. So, 42, they bring home grain. They bring home grain to feed them for a decent amount of time, I suppose. But the Bible says in verse 1, now the famine was severe in the land. Severe. And it came to pass when they had eaten up the grain which they had brought from Egypt that their father said to them, go back and buy us a little food. Don't you notice what Jacob did? Did Jacob know what had to happen in order for them to be able to buy grain? Those brothers were playing, weren't they? The man spoke roughly to us. The man says, if you don't do this, you can't trade in the land. The responsibility lay at Jacob's feet. What are you going to do with it? What did he do with it? He pretty much let him run out of food, didn't he? He said, listen, we're out of food. When we've eaten up the grain, he says, you're going to have to go back and buy us a little food. Now, I want to bring that back in a little bit. Go buy us a little food. You know, just enough to tide us over for a little while. You know, maybe this man, you know, maybe he wasn't too serious. If we'll just go back and buy a little, he'll let us buy it. You know, he don't want to give us a lot, but he'll give us a little. Well, Judah, verse 3, speaks up. And he said to him, the man solemnly warned us, saying, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. That sounds serious. If somebody solemnly warned you, don't come back unless you've got this with you, then you better not come back unless you've got that with you. And Judah believed that. Now, Jacob wasn't there. Jacob didn't spend 3 days in prison. Jacob didn't get to experience all of this event. Jacob is getting it secondhand information. But Judah's afraid. Judah was afraid while he was there. Well, he says, if you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. So here's what Judah says. Dad, it's up to you. Put it in our language. Dad, it's up to you. Either Benjamin's going with us and we'll buy food, or we're just going to sit here and starve to death and die. And that's just laying it out on the table, isn't it? This is what it's come down to. The only way we can go back and get food is he's got to go with us. Well, verse 6. Israel said, why did you deal so wrongfully with me as to tell the man you still had another brother? What did we say Jacob did to handle adversity? He called it up to bad luck. He blamed somebody else. What's he doing in verse 6? Why did you deal so wrongfully with me? He's looking at his nine sons and said, this is your fault. This is your fault. You told him that I was alive. You told him that you had a younger brother. You guys told him all of this. So in essence, it is your fault. You shouldn't have done that. You know, if I had been there, I would have done it a different way. Would Jacob have done it a different way? What's his name? Deceiver, right? What would he have done? He would have deceived. Is that not what he's done his whole life? Is that not what he done to steal his brother's blessing, to get his father's birthright? Is that not what he done to steal Laban's flocks? Everything that he's done in his life, he has lied and cheated and connived his way into getting what he wanted. What would he have done in that situation? He would have lied and cheated and got what he wanted, right? He said, it's on you guys. You've done it, not me. But they said, the man asked us pointedly about ourselves and our family, saying, is your father still alive? Have you another brother? And we told him according to these words. Could we possibly have known that he would say, bring your brother down? Now, I can't figure out. In chapter 43, it says the man asked us pointedly. In what we read in chapter 42, the Bible doesn't really say that. The Bible simply says he has got them afraid and they're spilling their guts. So, could these brothers be lying here? Maybe. I don't know. Really doesn't matter to the story. But they say he asked us pointedly if her father was alive and if their brother was at home. Either way, what Jacob had wanted them to do was to keep that information, not reveal that information. And truthfully, what they said at the end would be any of our thoughts. How could we have possibly known that he would want us to do that? You know, even if this wasn't Joseph, it was somebody else, how in the world are you going to possibly know what somebody might ask you to do? So they're just saying, hey, it's not our fault. All right. Verse 8. Then Judah said to Israel, send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you and also our little ones. He says, I myself will be a surety for him. From my hand you shall require him, for if I do not bring back him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. For if we had not lingered, surely by now we would have returned this second time. Notice Judah. Judah steps up. Reuben's already tried this, right? Didn't work with Reuben. And we're going to see at the end, and I know this is jumping way ahead to chapter 50, when Jacob's going to go through his sons and he's going to bless them, he doesn't bless Reuben. Because why? Well, Reuben, he's unstable as water. He says, you lay with my concubine. He doesn't bless Levi and Simeon. He says, you guys, you know, y'all are cruel men. You know, they killed a whole town of people, right? Because they defiled their sister. But then he goes to Judah. He says, the scepter shall not depart from between your feet. And, you know, the lawgiver is going to come from you. Judah, Jesus is coming through you. So Judah has stepped up, and I think this is the beginnings of that here. Judah has stepped up and is taking responsibility. But notice what Judah's concern is. He says, we got to arise and go that we may live and not die, both we and you and also our little ones. What is Judah's concern? His whole family. What is Jacob's concern? I am bereaved. You have bereaved me. I'm going to go down to the grave in sorrow. Jacob is concerned with self, and Judah is concerned with his family. Which one is the more spiritual one, the more faithful one? It's easy to see. It's not Jacob. All right. So Judah says, I'll be a surety for him. Verse 10, some translations say, you know, if we hadn't waited around, we could have already went twice. We could have already went down to Egypt twice and come back and got grain. Because we've waited till the last second till we're out of food and we've got to figure out something to do. You've let us go too long. Verse 11. All right. And their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. If it must be so. What does that mean? If there's absolutely no other way on God's green earth that we can do this, then I've got a plan. Doesn't he always have a plan? This whole time that we've studied Jacob, he's always got a plan, right? He's always got some kind of way that he can hopefully figure out how to get what he wants. And I wrote a note in my Bible. This is similar to him confronting Esau. If you remember when he wanted to confront Esau, he knows Esau's mad at him. What does he do? He sends them out in troops, and they got all these gifts and all these things. Look what he says. He says, take some of the best fruits of the land. in your vessels and carry down a present for the man. A little balm, a little honey, spices and myrrh, pistachio nuts and almonds. Take double money in your hand and take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take your brother also and arise and go to the man. What's his plan? Bribe him. Right? Bribe him. Take all of these things. Verse 14. And may God Almighty give you mercy before the man, that he may release your other brother and Benjamin. If I am bereaved, I am bereaved. When Jacob got to the point to where there's no other options laid before him, he says, you just got to do it. And if Benjamin dies and I have to go to my grave mourning, I'll go to my grave mourning. I read something and I wrote it down. This is Jacob's leadership. And sometimes this is how we deal with problems. Number one quality of Jacob's leadership is problems are best dealt with tomorrow. We do that? He put it off. Look at verse 1. He says, when they had eaten up the grain. You know, I would think if you see that your food is beginning to run low. All right, let me ask you this question. When do you go to the grocery store? When you're out of food, right? It's when you don't have anything left on your pantry and you eat the last box of rice that you've got, then you say, we got to go to the grocery store. Anybody do that? No, you don't do that. I mean, that would be silly. What did Jacob do? He waited till the pantry was empty, right? And then he says, now I guess we got to deal with this. Is that leadership? My dad used to tell me all the time, he said, son, don't ever put off till tomorrow what you can do today. He's telling me that all the time. Now, he took that to an extreme, and he would, you know, do everything he could today and never put anything off if he didn't have to. But isn't that sometimes good advice? A lot of times we put everything off, don't we? And we think that's going to cure the problem, but it doesn't. So Jacob's, you know, example of leadership is put it off till tomorrow. Number two, you got to realize if you're Jacob, you got to kind of say the problem really isn't that bad. Look at verse 2. He says, go down to Egypt and buy us a little food. They're just in the famine a little bit, maybe a couple years. There's still 5 more years. Now, does Jacob know that, to be fair? No, he doesn't know that. But this thing's been going on a while. And in essence, Jacob is saying, well, the problem really isn't that bad. Just go down there and buy us enough to get us by a few weeks. And he is downplaying the crisis. Do we ever do that? Sometimes we downplay it, right? And we think, well, if we'll just act like it's really not that bad, then we'll just kind of let it go and don't worry about it. Maybe it'll take care of itself. And that's not leadership. It's not leadership. You step up and you realize that it is a problem and you deal with that problem. All right, number three, according to Jacob, honesty is not the best policy. Verse 6, why did you do this? In essence, what he is saying is, why did you not lie to the man? Why did you tell him the truth? You know, as far as Jacob is concerned, when leadership happened, you don't tell anybody anything, and if you do have to tell, you tell them what they want to hear, not necessarily what the truth is. And that's what Jacob would do, right? That's what he would do. That's how he operated in life. So his example of leadership is honesty is not the best policy. Number four, always look out for number one. That's how Jacob operated. You know, Judah was like, hey, we're going to starve. Our families are going to starve. And we already said this. Jacob didn't care. He's the patriarch of this family. He's the leader. But he's looking out for number one. He's not concerned about those around him. He ultimately is putting one individual above his whole household. And if I'm not mistaken, were there not 75 people that went down from his household into Egypt? Think so. 75 people, Jacob is putting the concern of one above all those other 74. That's what he's doing. So his example of leadership is look out for number one. Number five, you blame other people for your problems. That's what good leaders do, right? Anytime you're in a leadership position and something goes wrong, what do? You find somebody to blame it on. That's as old as the world. That's what Eve did, right? And Adam, Eve blamed Adam. Adam blamed Eve. Then they blamed the devil. And God says, nope, it's on you. Sometimes the best thing we can do if in a leadership position is just say, hey, you know, I messed up. Should have done this different. Should have handled this better. Whatever it may be. Don't blame everybody else for your problems. Just step up and take responsibility. Number six, if efforts fail, throw money at it. If what you're trying to do to get what you want as a leader fails, throw money at it. That's the American way, isn't it? Anytime there's any kind of issue arises, what do? Throw money at it. You know, if you've got a problem with somebody over some kind of dispute over something, what do you say? And listen, I do this too. If there's some kind of problem over something, what do you do? How much, you know, to satisfy you? How much is this going to cost? Throw money at it. That's not always the best thing to do. That didn't solve the problem, did it? We're going to see in a little while, Joseph had cared less about the gift that he sent. Didn't care. Last one. When all else fails, turn to God. Did you notice something? Everything that we've read, when did Jacob finally mention God? Dead last, right? They have went through every scenario, everything he could think of. Hey, we're going to bribe him. We're going to send him gifts. We're going to give his money back. We're actually going to give him double his money. I'm going to send, you know, some of these things that we've got. And maybe God will bless you. He just kind of throws that in at the end. Some people say, well, that's an announcement of faith. That's not an announcement of faith. If this man was like Joseph, what would he have done to begin with? He would have consulted with God. But over and over you read through Jacob's life, God is last place in his life. He's not where he's supposed to be. You know, he would consult God after all of his efforts have failed. How many times do we do that? How many times when we face issues in life, do we try to fix it ourselves? And if we can't fix it, what do? Then we ask God to kind of step in, right? What if we did that the opposite way? What if we began, when there's an issue arises, that we started asking God to step in and fix it, and then we try to do what we can do? You think the outcomes will be different? What if when these brothers come back and they talk to their father, what if their father says, hey guys, stop, let's pray about this. Let's talk to God. Were they living in a time where God would speak to them? Wouldn't that be nice? God could have told them. Jacob could have asked God, living in his time period, God, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to send Benjamin down there? You think God would have answered him? All that we're reading all through here, God's talking to these people. He's telling them what he wants them to do. Jacob doesn't do that. You see, his leadership policies are different than what they should be. He focuses on self. All right, verse 15. So Jacob says, okay, go. Verse 15, so the men took that present and Benjamin, and they took double money in their hand, and they arose and they went down to Egypt, and they stood before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with him, he said to the steward of his house, take these men to my home and slaughter an animal and make ready, for these men will dine with me at noon. So I want you to notice this. Joseph sees Benjamin. Now he's not seen him in a long time. And perhaps Benjamin was a younger kid the last time Joseph seen him. But he still recognizes him. He recognizes all these brothers. Maybe he doesn't look the same, but he's with these brothers, so he's assuming that it's him. Now, these brothers don't know what Joseph is planning. Notice the Bible says he tells his steward of his house. He's speaking Egyptian. They have no idea. So he says, hey, I want you to bring them into my house and they're going to dine with me tonight. I want us to see that we're going to find out these brothers are terrified. They're terrified. They bring him into his house. Now we've talked about in these important people's houses, what's in the basement? The prison, right? The prison's in the basement. So they're bringing him into his house. Ultimately, they think, we're going back to jail. But in essence, what it is this is Joseph's plan beginning to unfold. And in fact, even bigger than that, this is God's plan that's beginning to unfold. This is God's plan right here beginning to unfold to bring all of his people down into Egypt, and they're going to stay there 430 years and then come out with a mighty hand. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9, eye has not seen, ear hath not heard, or entered into the thoughts of man the things God has prepared for them that love him. Does that describe this right here? Eyes hadn't seen it. Their ears hadn't heard of it. It's not even entered into the thoughts of their heart. But God's got something prepared for them. They are God's people. Well, they don't always do everything right, but they're still God's people. And God has something prepared for them that is far greater. And what is God doing? God is preserving life. God is preserving His people. All right, verse 17. It says, then the man did as Joseph ordered. And the man brought the men into Joseph's house. Now the men were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house, and they said, it is because of the money. Remember, they're saying, God's punishing us. They're remembering that. God's punishing us because the money was in our sack, which was returned in our sacks for the first time that we are brought in, so that he may make a case against us and seize us and to take us as slaves with their donkeys. Don't we do that a lot of times? We immediately think worst case scenario when something's happening. Worst case scenario. We worry, and that's what they're doing. They have a good excuse, though, to do this. All right, verse 19, when they drew near to the steward of Joseph's house, they talked with him. So they're trying to talk their way out of it. You would do the same thing. I would do the same thing. They get to this steward. And they said, oh, sir, we indeed came down the first time to buy food. But it happened when we came to the encampment that we opened our sacks, and there each man's money was in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. So we have brought it back in our hand, and we have brought down the other money in our hands to buy food. We do not know who put money in our sacks. They're pleading their case. We didn't do this. We didn't try to steal. We didn't want the money. They're just trying to get out of it. But he said, peace be with you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money. Then he brought Simeon out to them. Notice, isn't this odd that an Egyptian is saying this to them? Don't you think that they would think this was odd that an Egyptian saying this? Who told the Egyptian to say this? This is Joseph's steward. So this is his servant that is working for him. There's absolutely not a doubt in my mind he's Egyptian. He doesn't know the God of heaven. But you think Joseph had rehearsed this with him? These guys are probably going to ask about this money. Here's what I want you to say. Here's what I want you to say. Hey, I had your money. I had it. So, in essence, what that's doing? That's freeing them, right? You paid for the grain. I had your money. It was where it was supposed to be. But he said, the God of your fathers, your God and the God of your fathers, he says, has given you treasure in your sack. God has blessed you. The reason that you got your money back is not because God has been mean to you. It's not because God is punishing you. It's not because God is not looking down upon you favorably. It's because God is gracious. God is merciful. And that's why you have the money back in your sack. You think maybe these guys are trying to figure out what in the world is this guy talking about? You know, they don't have a clue that this is Joseph. That even entered their minds that it could even possibly be Joseph. They don't know where Joseph is. I'm sure they wish they knew where he was, but they don't know. So, he tells him this. Verse 24. So the man brought in the men into Joseph's house, and he gave them water, and he washed their feet, and he gave their donkeys feed. Then they made the present ready for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that he would eat bread there. Now I want you to picture this. Remember their father's plan. When you go to the man, what do? You got all of these gifts, right? And you got all of this double money, and you want to present this to Joseph. We'll just have to stop there and we'll pick up next week. I appreciate your attention.